Good evening, grave robbers, and welcome back to the television graveyard. We are your TV necromancers, Lara Prince and Noah Woolahan. And we've come here tonight to examine the spirits of past television shows to find out which ones could be resurrected, should be resurrected, and which ones should just stay doomed. This is a podcast in which there are two rules. We must analyze the history, the hype, and the aftermath of failed media, and we must see the media through to the end, to its natural conclusion, no matter what. Welcome to Stay Doomed Fantasy Island. With me, as always, is Tattoos Noah Houlihan.
I think if we just go on this side... Oh, it's Dr. Torture!
Really? You went with that and not...
Well, because you took the thing I was going to say.
You were going to say the plane?
No.
The natural thing to say for Fantasy Island?
Nobody actually says, like, the plane like that. A couple people go, the plane.
Yeah, they don't... Because the way Tattoo says it in the original series is now seen as kind of racist.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes sense to have the characters not say it that way. Mm-hmm. But one of the first lines is the plane.
The plane. But
so this is 2020's Fantasy Island. It's Razzie Month.
Yes.
This was a fun one. So we're going to pour one out.
All right, let's pour one out. What do you got there, Laura?
All right. So I have the Fantasy Island. Mm-hmm. It is a beautiful rum-based cocktail with no hallucinogens in it.
Okay.
It is a little coconut rum, a little banana rum, mango juice, watermelon juice, and it's garnished with some freeze-dried mango that I just actually had.
All right, let me...
Yeah, it's quite good, actually.
You've been talking this one up off mic, so...
I love how much I've been talking it up versus how much I've actually had to drink of it, which is a very...
Oh, that is very nice.
Yeah, it's very tropical. It actually does
it
taste like...
It feels very tropical.
It tastes like something you would get, perhaps, at a fancy island resort.
Yes. I went with the special water, special island water here. It's blue because it's my fantasy, damn it, so I get to make the drink I want. So it is a blue Curacao and some Malibu rum. Blended over ice, and then I added some special water, which was some lemon lime. And it's pretty good if you want to give it a shot.
Okay. This looks like every drink you ever make.
It's my fantasy.
Not very good.
No, you don't like it?
No.
I thought it was fine.
It's very coconut forward, weirdly.
Yeah, I like that.
Despite the fact that like, mine also has coconut rum and tastes less coconutty.
Yeah, I mean...
I think I have more things masking
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you do.
Because I have more of the mango and the watermelon.
But yeah, that's my drink. So this is our third Razzie film for the year.
Yep, yep.
This is Blumhouse's Fantasy Island.
Yeah, I feel like that's important. Because Fantasy Island was a comedy that ran on television.
You thought it was a comedy?
I thought it was like a comedy drama, like... I thought it was at least a lighthearted...
I felt like it kind of falls into that, like, Love Boat area, I guess, of TV. Because, like, the only episode I can clearly remember is there's an episode where... If you don't know the conceit of Fantasy Island, every episode, this is the TV show, Mr. Rourke and Tattoo would welcome a new guest to the island, and they would live out their fantasy, and the fantasy usually wouldn't go as planned.
Right.
So the episode I remember is they want it to be royalty.
Right.
And they ended up being Marie Antoinette.
Oh, no.
So, like, they're royalty, and they're kings and queens, and they're like, yeah, everyone's starving. Like, what are you going to do about it? So, like, there was always that edge of, like, be careful what you wish for.
Right.
In Fantasy Island. But this one, you're like, we're going to take a really hard left into Darktown. And this is going to be closer to, like, Wishmaster.
Yes. It's definitely got that, like, intentionally skewed.
Yes. And I believe this is the biggest production for Blumhouse ever.
Was it?
I believe so. Because Blumhouse... I can't think of a single thing that they've done. But they're like the Mockbuster people, right?
No, you are definitely not thinking of the right...
Oh.
Blumhouse is like the horror powerhouse. They're the Conjuring. They're...
The oh, nun. Are they? I'm yeah, sorry. You're... Yeah, I definitely was thinking of something else then.
I mean, they are Get Out. They're Happy Death Day.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. They got their start with much smaller, lower budget things. Because I believe their first, like, big movie was Paranormal Activity.
Okay.
But
okay.
Blumhouse is a pretty well-respected horror house at this point.
Then I don't know what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Because I believe you have a friend who does or did work for Blumhouse at one point.
Josh, yeah.
No, I was thinking of Nikki. She used to do social media for them.
Oh, yes. Nikki Black. Shout out to Nikki Black.
Yeah, so they're pretty well known as far as horror. So this is actually, like, pretty standard for them. That's why I was very surprised when you said, like, this is their biggest one yet.
Because I was wrong.
Because I was like, oh, there's not, like, a lot of high-profile actors in this.
Yes.
I can't imagine this was super expensive to produce.
Yeah, so it's the horror take on Fantasy Island. And it's very Fantasy Island in that it starts with a plane. And instead of a tattoo...
That's not how it starts. This movie has a cold open, essentially. It is a standard horror movie opening.
Right!
It is a young, nubile blonde woman running through the forest being chased down by someone or something. And... She makes it to, like, a cabin and finds a phone. And she starts begging the person on the other end of the phone for help.
Please, please, there's no time. I've been abducted. I've been taken to some crazy island.
Calm down. I know where you are. Stay there. I will send help.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You have to hurry. You have to hurry. You have to hurry.
It will all be fine, Mrs. Madison.
Wait. How do you know my name?
Because you are one of my guests.
Which is important that he says that to her. Then she's apprehended by two people we do not see.
This net, does she come up again or am I crazy?
She comes up. She absolutely comes up again.
Because I completely forgot this scene happened. The main reason I did is this scene. Well, first off, first and foremost, we turned subtitles on like 7 minutes in. Because I couldn't hear a damn thing anyone
was turned
saying.
It on during this scene because the mix was very bad.
Because the mix was so bad because they were so quiet that I turned it up real loud. And then the phone rang and shook the walls. It was so loud.
Yes.
And I turned it back down and then I couldn't hear anything again. So I was like, all right, we're doing subtitles. And it was so dark. I couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
So, like, I had no idea who the characters were, what was happening.
She's actually the first lead character we meet is this blonde woman. She's... central to the rest of the plot.
How do I not know this?
When we get to her, I will reveal who she is.
Okay.
We get the title opening, and then we are on the beach. It's a beautiful day, and we see a different beautiful woman, all in white.
Yes, this is Julia.
And she says breathlessly, "The plane."
Yes.
And she runs and tells Mr. Rourke, who is Michael Pena, best known for Ant-Man.
Yes, as Ant-Man's friend.
That the plane is here. And Rourke immediately grabs Julia and they, like, go to retrieve the guests. He tells the staff to smile. And the entire staff... You ever ride the Haunted Mansion or Tower of Terror?
Yeah,
that's who
them.
The staff reminds me of. Like, yeah. Intentionally creepy and expressionless.
Yes, they're the human versions of the Monstars.
For the most part, I'm still trying to place... One of them reminds me of someone specific, and I still haven't been able to, like, place who he is. But one of them in particular has got a very lurchy
yes,
quality
that was
to him.
Milton. Yes. You caught his name, and you're like, oh, Milton has something to do with hell.
Milton wrote Paradise Lost.
Right.
So I was like, oh, okay, we're getting heavy-handed here. And we meet our guests.
Yes.
We meet... Melanie, who's this immediately, innately unlikable millennial.
Yes, because she was in Life Sentence.
Yeah, she's Lucy Hale, so this is her second Lucy.
So immediately unlikable.
She has a lot of similarities to her Life Sentence character.
Yeah.
Throughout the movie, honestly. And she just kind of looks down and goes,
oh, this place doesn't suck.
Mm-hmm.
That's her establishing character moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also meet Gwen... who I had to look up her name because
is notable because she actually looks like an adult.
Yes.
Everyone else looks like, you know, standard teen movie fodder. Mm-hmm. Gwen looks to be in her, you know, early mid-30s.
Yeah. Small note, I feel like every cast member has trouble pronouncing her name.
Gwen?
Yeah, because for the longest time, I kept wondering who Glenn was.
Mm.
Because they're just lazy in pronouncing Gwen at times. And plus, the sound's not very good in this film.
And she is helped out of the plane by a chivalrous young man who insists on helping her down.
Yes.
Patrick.
Patrick.
And we find out that they win a contest.
Yes.
And we also meet the last two guests, who are J.D. and Brax.
J.D. and Brax.
Who call each other brothers.
Yes.
We're going to establish this in a scene or two, and I'm just going to say it now, because they are stepbrothers.
Yes.
Brax is Asian.
Yes.
And J.D. is a white kid.
Yeah, J.D., they seem like they were going for a Bradley Cooper type.
I was going to say, the term that was that used to be used was doucheboat.
A doucheboat, yes.
Yeah, the he's hot, but he looks douchey.
Yes.
Bradley Cooper's early career was built on being a doucheboat.
Being a doucheboat, yes. Like, he is one of the greatest douches in Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, Wedding Crashers, even The Hangover.
Yeah, like, he's a bit of a
douchebag. Plays that character. And then Bradley Cooper is like, progressed to the point where he just plays likable people now. I think too much came out about Bradley Cooper personally to keep him from, it's hard to be a doucheboat when, like, you're constantly seen taking your mommy to Ocean City.
When is he not a doucheboat?
Silver Linings Playbook.
He's not in that film?
He's not.
Okay.
Because
I would say Rocket Raccoon is a bit of a doucheboat.
I wouldn't say Rocket Raccoon is hot.
Hmm. Name a hotter raccoon. See?
Lord Pandworth. I have a raccoon who wears a suit on my bookshelf named Lord Pandworth. Mm. So that's what I pointed to for those of you.
Yeah. He's a major doucheboat in A Star is Born.
Yes. I'm not even sure he's a dreamboat part of it. He's just kind of douchey.
I mean, he's a rock star, so like...
Yeah, that's never been a kind of... Anyway, so JD is clearly, like, supposed to be proto-Bradley Cooper, like a new baby, next-gen Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
And they high-five. Everything is very cute.
Yes.
We immediately establish that Melanie has no cell service.
Yes.
And she goes, I guess not everything's possible.
Yeah.
Because she is an unlikable millennial.
Yes. And also it's a horror movie, so they have to immediately establish cell phones don't work.
And we get these establishing moments of people being shown to their rooms. JD and Brax do not yet have one. Patrick tries to tip the bellhop, who refuses and said there's no need for money here.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie unpacks a framed picture of her and a young man,
mm-hmm.
ostensibly her boyfriend. And
we'd assume.
Gwen is in this big, beautiful suite.
Yes.
It's too big for one person.
Yes.
And she goes, like, is this all for me? And she's like, yeah. And this Julia shows Gwen to her room. Because this bond between Julia and Gwen begins to be established.
Yes.
And she warns Gwen that, like, her life is about to change.
Mm-hmm.
Julia walks away and Julia's nose begins to bleed.
Yes.
And I find this very interesting because there's two reasons that could be.
Right.
Because we kind of find out that people on the island aren't always what they appear,
mm-hmm.
and Julia in particular. So then the next thing we see is Gwen in a bikini already. I turned to you and went, Fox!
Yeah, because Fox.
The worst thing is I went to you and went, Fox! And then we saw a mirror scare of a burned man, and I was like, oh no, it's Murder in Small...
Small Town
Murder X. Murder in Small Town X, the sequel. And then we get to the bar, and, you know, the brothers are kind of messing with Patrick in this, like, you know... collegial way.
You guys are actually brothers?
Oh, you think because we're different colors that means we can't be brothers?
Wow.
Dude, racist much?
Yeah, and Patrick, like, is awkward and tries to backpedal. And I have her as Lucy because I hadn't looked up her name on IMDb yet because they hadn't established Melanie's name yet. She grabs two drinks. Gwen goes to take one from her and she goes,
I will take two of those. Thank you.
Oh, great. I need a drink.
Mm. Sorry, I'm double fisting.
And then she's very, very forward with Patrick. Like, very sexually forward. And Patrick is visibly uncomfortable with that. Melanie is Lucy Hale's character and Melanie sucks. Okay, sorry, that was my next note.
Yep.
And Rourke goes over the rules. There is one fantasy per guest.
Yes.
And you must see your fantasy through to its natural conclusion no matter what.
Yes.
And JD and Brax are like, this isn't really much of a fantasy. We don't even have a room yet. And Mr. Rourke goes, well, follow me. Your fantasy starts now.
Yeah, your fantasy is first.
And JD calls Brax T.
Yes.
And Brax is like, please stop calling me that. It was his college nickname and he hates it.
And he hates it.
And the brothers are led by Mr. Rourke to a rager house party.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like, honestly, it looks like a standard after prom party from any teen movie.
Yeah. Everyone's in bathing suits.
Everyone looks impossibly good in them.
Yeah, everyone's a model. JD is immediately like, women, yay!
Well, and there's somebody in like the Iron Man water hover suit jetpack.
Oh, yeah,
like doing stunts in the pool. JD's like, I don't know if I told you this, but Brax is gay. Like, all these women aren't really going to do it for him.
Right.
And Mr. Rourke is like, JD, please. Do you really think I didn't think of that? And we see these, like, hot, scantily clad men. And Brax is like, do you think that's all it takes to make me happy? I have layers. And they open it and it's like a weed den. Layers. I have two layers.
I have two layers.
And it's pretty funny. And then Brax looks over and we see the same burned man jump scare.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, as quickly as he looks back, the burned man is gone.
Yeah, so he just immediately assumes, like, weed. Weed must be doing this to me.
Yes. He goes, I'm going to switch to CBD.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. This movie is from 2020.
Yeah.
This movie feels older. Like, yeah. Not, like, substantial, but this movie feels like it's early, mid-2010s, not 2020. So then we get to Gwen waking up in bed. We get this shot a couple times, almost like we're back in 365 days.
Yes.
We get Gwen waking up in bed a bunch of times.
She's sleepy.
And the corpse-like attendant named Milton leads Gwen to Rourke. And they kind of discuss her fantasy.
Yes.
Because she says, happiness and I aren't compatible.
Yeah.
And Rourke says, like, you want to change the moment you regret the most.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that Gwen turned down a marriage proposal.
Yes.
From a man she loved named Alan.
Yes.
And he opens this set of double doors and it's the restaurant in which Alan proposed.
Mm-hmm.
And Gwen's really impressed that the details are all there.
Yeah.
Alan arrives and Rourke assumes the role of the restaurant host.
Yeah.
And takes them to their table.
Mm-hmm.
And we realize from their conversation that this isn't Alan acknowledging. Alan is playing it as if she had never said no.
Like, yeah, it is that moment.
Yeah.
It is basically the idea. Like, this isn't a do-over. She is back in that moment. It's not like he's trying to propose again. She is blown away, but also not accepting that this is reality. She keeps asking questions like, why are you acting this way? Like, how much did they pay you to do this? I can't believe they flew you out for this. And he...
Oh my God, you didn't have to pay to come here, did you?
Yeah, he responds, but like, almost as if he heard a different question.
No, he responds, what do you mean? I saw you in our bed this morning.
Yeah, like...
When did you hit your head today?
Yeah, he's not nearly as freaked out by the idea of these questions of like, how did you get on the island?
Well... She goes, like, you didn't have to pay to come here, did you? And he goes, yeah, the cabbie just told me it was free. Like, he's answering the question, but not... He's not answering her question. She's answering a question.
Right. Gotcha.
So we then go to our last two guests, Patrick and Gwen. Or, excuse me, Patrick and Melanie.
Melanie, yes.
And Patrick's a nice guy, and we find out that he wanted to be a soldier, but something happened.
So he wasn't allowed to enlist? His mom wouldn't let him?
His mom forbid him to enlist.
Yes.
So then he wanted to be a cop, but now he's, like, on desk duty.
Yeah, so he wants to live out his soldier fantasy.
And then Melanie's fantasy is that she was bullied horrifically, and she wants revenge on her childhood bully.
Yes.
So Rourke comes up and goes, like, I need to speak with Melanie privately. Go do some push-ups or crunches or something.
Maybe some squats.
And she says, like, oh no, I told him what my fantasy was. I'm owning it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he explains where Melanie needs to go.
Mm-hmm. She's going to be going into an elevator, and she's going to press the...
the button with the floor with no name.
Yeah.
Which is just a picture of a snake.
A snake. There's
which I would have just
snakes.
Said, the picture of a snake.
Yeah, snake is a lot easier than, like, nothing.
And we see water dripping. Every time we see water dripping, like, you kind of have that, like, oh, we're getting toward the fantasy.
Something important is happening. It's also important to note that she says, can I film it on my phone?
In front of Patrick.
In front of Patrick. And Rourke is like, it's your fantasy. If you want, go ahead.
She's like, and it's very blasé, like, yeah, that's your thing.
Yeah, whatever you want to do.
And she gets down, and we see the woman from the first scene tied to a chair.
Mm-hmm.
The kidnapped woman is Melanie's childhood bully.
Oh, right. Okay. So, I could not recognize her. It was so dark.
Yeah, well, I caught her because she's wearing a pretty distinct yellow dress through the entire film.
Okay.
Which I think is intentional that, like, she's wearing something you will recognize so that when we see her later,
mm-hmm.
we realize it's not just a random blonde woman, that it is this person. And we know this is Sloane Madison. And so Melanie sets up her phone and is impressed by the hologram.
Yeah, she thinks it's like a Tupac.
Yeah.
They bring up the Tupac hologram a lot
yes.
in this film.
And then, because Patrick goes like, well, what if someone's dead? And Melanie goes, Tupac.
Tupac. Have you seen the Tupac hologram?
And Melanie turns a dial, a little like cattle prod comes out and electrocutes Sloane.
Yes.
And then she throws another dial. We hear a toilet flush and a bunch of water fall on Sloane. Because Sloane had dumped a bucket of toilet water on Melanie
yes.
when they were young, at the 8th grade dance. You know, some light Carrie references.
Yeah, yeah.
And the next one she hits is Sloane watching a video of herself having sex.
Yes.
And then the next thing she hits is the film being posted on Facebook.
Yes.
Now, somebody eagle-eyed caught that if you look at the scene closely,
mm-hmm.
there's a little lock on the post, meaning that whatever Facebook this was actually posted to
yeah.
got only me.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't...
So it wasn't actually like a public post.
Yeah, I guess that's the easiest way to create that footage.
Yeah.
Is to just actually do it and film it, but that's a fun little mistake.
And... the movie posts on her Facebook, and then it cuts to another camera feed.
Mm-hmm.
And we see her husband watching a game.
Yeah.
And then the phone rings, and it's Sloane from Sloane's number.
Yeah.
But she can't speak or...
yeah, because she's gagged.
So she screams, but he can't hear her. Like, he can't really understand her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see him see the video on Facebook of her having... clearly consensual sex with another man.
Yes.
Melanie realizes that it really is her childhood bully.
Yes.
And begins to panic.
Yeah. At this point, she tries to, like, call it off. She tries to call Rourke.
Well, we cut away from her.
Okay.
For a bit.
Yeah, we jump between these fantasies a lot.
Yeah, but we establish everyone's fantasy, because we've already established Gwen and now Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick wants to play soldier.
Yes.
Which...
He calls it Call of Duty a few times.
Yeah, which... what a terrible fantasy. I feel
it's,
like...
it's the weirdest of all of them, in my opinion.
Because to me, like, if there's a be careful what you wish for, like, that one seems like it has the high ability to go to hell in a handbasket.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and also, for what he thinks he's about to do, it's something that you can do. Like, he kind of thinks he's about to go play paintball, which is a thing you can do in New Jersey.
Like, yeah.
Like, I'm going to fly all the way across the world and play paintball with strangers. Like, why?
Oh, because there is a funny joke where it's like a throwaway line where JD's like, is this like a LARP? I mean, you know, like for nerds?
Well, he says, maybe it's like LARPing. It's pretty fun, I heard from some nerd.
Yeah, like...
LARPing is fun, just so you guys know.
I know, I loved that, because we actually had a friend who was a professional wrestler who would ask us to play D&D.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in that way of, like, you know, D&D's lame, unless, you know,
yeah.
you're into it.
Wouldn't it be so funny if we just started playing D&D?
Yeah.
Like, for laughs? Like, Like, could you imagine if I was like a level 9 goblin? Like, could you imagine that? And I'd have like stealth skills and stuff, and we could go on an adventure and find treasure. Wouldn't that be just hilarious?
It was, yeah, like, it was that kind of, that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And we then see, like, this creepy kind of feral man. Michael Rooker is here!
Michael Rooker is here!
And I was like, wait a minute, James Gunn didn't direct this movie.
Yeah. How's he getting work?
So, he kind of, like, tries to get Patrick to come with him. But Patrick immediately is kidnapped by a bunch of American soldiers and is trying to, like, make the case of, like, no, I'm an American, please, like, I'm an American too. A covert mission.
Yeah.
They were like, we're the only game in town. He's like, covert op? So they grab him and they're going to take him to LT.
Yes.
Who's the lieutenant, who there is their commanding officer. And so they're going, and then we kind of see this, we smash back to JD and Brax, their party, having like a little conversation about after Brax came out to his parents, Brax had been disowned.
Yes.
And that JD has kind of put his life on hold to take care of Brax.
Yeah.
But Brax wants to, like, go get his own place.
Mm-hmm.
We also established that JD is not over Jenny.
Yeah.
His girlfriend from home who comes up twice.
Yes, because he mentions that he spent the night with a girl named Chastity.
And it's just a nickname.
And they just talked all night while he cried.
Yeah, she was like, because Brax goes, I hear you had a wild night. Yeah, he cried a lot.
All night.
We get that, like, little thing of, like, pathos for Brax and JD.
Mm-hmm.
And we then go back to Gwen. Gwen gets the second proposal from Alan. She agrees to marry him. The restaurant bursts out into applause.
Yeah. There's a great moment where, like, they hug, and it's a close-up on her face, and she's kind of crying. And, like, her performance here is great. Because, like, without a word, you just see in her eyes, like, this is so good, but man, do I wish it was real.
Yes.
Like, she's able to communicate that with just a look, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's Maggie Q, and she's a fantastic actress.
What would I know her from?
I know her from Divergent, so I'm trying to figure out what you would know her from. Let me look it up real quick.
I just might not know her, but...
Yeah, because I always think of her as being the tattoo artist from Divergent. Her known for is Divergent, Insurgent, Fantasy Island, Balls of Fury. She is Maggie in Balls of Fury.
Okay, I kind of can picture.
She was on the TV series Nikita as the title character.
La Femme Nikita?
No, the reboot, just Nikita.
Oh.
Which sounds like a bit, but it isn't. She's... She's not, like, a name. I've heard of her, but...
Okay.
I like her in...
She's great in this.
Yeah, she's fantastic in this. I only just stopped calling her actual adult in my notes. Because she looks more like a grown-up than most horror
than
movie
anyone.
Protagonists.
Yeah.
Well, than most Blumhouse protagonists, frankly.
True.
And... So she's kind of, like... She does give a great performance in this whole film.
Yeah.
And then we go back to the brothers, and they're... In the house now, kind of messing around.
Yeah, they find suits.
They put on
matching suits.
Matching, like, Miami Vice-looking suits.
Yeah.
They find a secret panic room and an armory.
Yes.
Oh my god, it's a panic room. I feel like Jodie Foster in that Jodie Foster movie.
Yeah, panic room.
Which, no, I actually legitimately really like that line.
It's a great line!
And then they find, like, a grenade launcher and start loading grenades.
No, they don't. What they find is grenades and one of those tennis ball shooters. Like, they're throwing it into something that's used for, like, tennis practice, but they're throwing grenades in it. And they're shooting them out into the ocean and they're exploding. And they're just like, cool.
Yeah. But what's interesting is the grenade they launch into the ocean
mm-hmm.
becomes ambiance for Patrick.
Yes, so cool. Like, those little touches where the thing that brings us to another guest's fantasy is, like, tied together are wonderful.
Because we then cut back to Patrick right after the grenade hits the water.
Mm.
We hear the sound effect from Patrick's point of view.
Yes.
Cool. And it, everyone's very, very tense. And Patrick clearly recognizes the commanding officer he's been taken to.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very stricken and upset.
Yeah.
And the commanding officer is very confrontational.
Yes.
Like, what are you doing here? Who sent you? And Patrick is not playing dumb. He genuinely doesn't know the answer to the commanding officer's questions.
And he's kind of freaking out.
So the commanding officer seizes his dog tags and runs pale and goes, why is my name on your dog tags?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know yet. We've also established that the movie Dazed and Confused just came out. So we now know this is the 90s. For all of these soldiers.
Yeah, because all of a sudden one of the guys is like, Dave's confused, you know. All right, all right, all right.
Yeah, because he says all right, all right, all right, and like Patrick looks at him and goes, you know, like that movie that came out last year.
Dazed and Confused.
Which is a little clumsy.
You think? I actually really liked that.
I, you know, that movie that came out last year. I feel like it could have been done a little less clumsily of, like, you know, like Dazed and Confused, and have Patrick go, that old movie? What do you mean old movie? It came out last year!
Yeah.
And that, like, kind of also gets the fish out of temporal water.
Yeah, maybe just, like, a few cleanups to that, like, I finally just saw it after a year.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Then we go back to Melanie, and we see a creepy man with surgical tools enter.
Yes.
And he goes up to the glass, and Melanie freaks out because it's Dr. Torture, the psychologist she used to go to who talks too much.
Yeah.
But his mouth has been sewn shut.
Well, she said earlier how much she hates Dr. Torture.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I had to go to Dr. Torture and do therapy sessions with him. And the whole time I was like, is that really his name? Dr. Torture? If your last name was Torture, you change your last name. It used to be Bludgeoning. It's a good change. It's a good change. But she specifically says, he talks too much. I wish I could staple his mouth shut. And then when he reveals his mouth, because he's wearing like a surgical mask, when he reveals his mouth, it's been stapled closed.
Yeah.
But, you know, good on Dr. Torture for following COVID guidelines. He's the only one that's doing it. So, you know.
This movie was made in 2019.
I know it's a bit.
Anyway, Melanie thinks very quickly and begin. Now, when she uses the intercom, her voice comes through distorted.
Yes.
And she goes, cut off her left ring finger. And he goes to cut off her left ring finger. And she goes, no, 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 her right.
Yes.
Gets Torture to go to her right. And then she intentionally hits the electrocution knob again.
Yes.
So it hits Torture instead of Sloane.
Yes.
And then also dumps the water on them.
Yes, so it would be more intense. Doesn't harm Sloane at all.
Mm-mm.
Despite the fact that she's also being covered in toilet water.
Because she's not part of the circuit. Like, the thing is connected to him. The tasey bit?
Yeah, the tasey bit is hitting him.
Mm-hmm.
But if water then hits him, and then that same water hits her, that would create a circuit.
So then Melanie also picks up like a chair, throws it through the glass, and steps in to rescue Sloane.
Yeah.
And Sloane looks at her and goes, I know you. Meredith?
Melanie. So, like, I love that bit where it's just like, she still sucks. Like, Sloane still sucks and is still, like, her bully.
Well, we don't really know she sucks yet.
Well,
it's just that she didn't remember her name.
The fact that she is so important to Melody.
Yeah.
And doesn't remember her name, like, kind of shows that she sucks.
Yeah.
So, like, in that moment, which is supposed to feel like a hero moment, where it's Melody, like, doing the right thing. For her legs to get cut underneath her and have this person who is so important to her life not know her name.
Yeah.
Is great.
So then we start seeing, like, gangsters moving in on Brax and JD's house.
Yes.
Because they wanted to have it all and throw a big party. And as Rourke says, the downside to having it all is then someone usually wants it.
Yeah.
So it becomes, like, Scarface-y.
Yeah, well, he actually says something like, oh, those must be Alvaro's men.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait, who? It's like, oh, that's whose house you're in.
Yeah, that's who used to own the house.
So, like, at this point, I'm kind of thinking, oh, the fantasy probably said, I want to live it up like Scarface. And they're going real literal with it. It's not quite what's happening, but...
Yeah.
So, in one of my absolute favorite bits, they're like, oh, let's get us and all the models into the panic room.
Yes.
And they run upstairs, and for some reason, they don't want to immediately jump in the panic room. I forget what's, like, holding them back from getting in with the models.
I think they wanted to get Brax in. Brax tries to call out for help from Rourke.
Oh, yeah. Brax is trying to use the phone and talks to Rourke. So while they're talking to Rourke, Chastity closes the panic room.
Yes.
And locks them out. And JD's like, Chastity, come on! So there's just...
Really disappointed in you.
Which he doesn't say that till later. But just, there's something so funny to me about how behind this bookshelf is a panic room full of half-naked models and guns.
Yep. That is true.
Meanwhile, the gangsters, who all look like they're out of the video game Payday, with like clown and pig masks, roll up with guns.
Really? Because I kind of got Dark Knight vibes from how many of them had like clowny.
Oh, look up the box art to Payday.
Okay. I'll take your word on that one. So yeah, we have this bit where like the models are not helping. And the gangsters start to, like, descend on the house.
Yes.
Then we get back to Melanie and Sloane. And Sloane is, like, wrong genre savvy. Because Melanie is convincing Sloane that she, too, was kidnapped. Because she's too ashamed to tell Sloane the truth.
Yeah.
And Sloane goes, like, okay, this is probably someone we both know. We both went to high school together. It's probably someone we went to high school with. Is it that psycho stalker girl?
Yeah.
Which was her nickname for Melanie.
Yes.
Because Melanie had to do a therapy exercise where she wrote letters to students she wanted to connect with.
Yeah.
And Sloane had stolen and put them all over the cafeteria.
Yeah, they burn booked her.
Yeah. And
Melanie's like, yeah, probably her. I think her name was Meredith.
Yes, like Melanie tries to kind of find her way out because she's like, how did you escape? Headbutt. And then I shot him with his gun. What happened to the gun?
Lost it.
Like,
all of this is wonderful.
But then Dr. Torture shows up out of nowhere to try to kill Sloane.
This is one of many times where people are talking, and then all of a sudden, Dr. Torture tackles them.
Yeah, he like spears her.
Dr. Torture is like 6'6". And like a brick house.
Yes.
And is wearing like that lime green surgical outfit.
Yeah.
And always comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, he's somehow incredibly stealth. And then Michael Rooker appears again.
Yes.
His character's name is Damon.
His character name is Michael Rooker, and he is playing himself.
Fair. Okay. Michael Rooker stabs Dr. Torture from behind.
Yes.
And Dr. Torture bleeds out his eyes.
Yes.
Gwen wakes up in bed with a nightmare.
Yes.
But this time she's next to Alan, her husband. And she looks over at her lock screen and sees that it's a picture of her wedding to Alan.
Yes.
Now we're back to Patrick. And he and the lieutenant are trying to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they establish that... Patrick had, like, the lieutenant steals Patrick's wallet and goes through it.
Mm-hmm.
And says, why do you have a picture of me and my son? And that's when we realize who the lieutenant is and why his dog tags are around Patrick's neck.
Mm-hmm.
This is Patrick's father.
See, I love the game of chess they play here.
With the nicknames?
With the nicknames, because Patrick's like, I think I'm your son. Like, you're my dad. And now we're the same age, and it's very strange. And they're kind of going back and forth, and Patrick brings up, like,
I had a nickname
that only you would know. What is it? His game is, I'm trying to prove that you're not real. And this is all a fantasy, because that's something that Mr. Rook couldn't tell him.
Yeah.
And Patrick's father then goes, why don't you tell me? because, like, he doesn't believe it's really his son. So Patrick says, Patch.
Yeah.
Thinking, this is a good chess move in my opinion, that if it's an actor, the actor would yes and it and be like, that's right, Patch, my little boy. But instead he goes, wrong, it's Ali, because he was born...
No, he goes, it's Ali, and nothing else. Patrick responds with why his father called him Ali. He was like, I was born 3 months premature.
Yeah.
And you said I wasn't the type to throw in the towel, just like Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of establish who each other is, and they have, like, this very good bonding moment. And then Patrick and his father establish that in Patrick's timeline, his father has died.
Yes.
And that it is tomorrow in this timeline. He goes, you died in a mission in Venezuela.
We'll be there tomorrow.
Yes. So we find out, like, oh, no.
Yes.
Patrick's going to play soldier, but he's going to be in his father's unit when his father dies.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get back to Gwen. And he's on the beach. She talks to Rourke for a little bit. And we find out, like, she talks to Rourke a little bit. And then she looks over on the beach, and Alan is older now.
Yeah, like 5 years older.
And Rourke goes, you've been married for 5 years. And they establish, like, all of these memories are real.
Yes.
And then a little girl runs up to Alan, and it's Lila, her daughter. And when Gwen starts to scroll through her camera roll, she has all of these memories of her life with Alan and Lila. And Rourke explains his own game. The island gave him back his wife in this very Doolittle-esque, like, we were going to find this place and then my wife died.
Yes.
And now the island lets me have my wife back in exchange for my service as the island steward.
So for the record, we have 100% wife death in all of the Razzie movies.
Yes.
Granted, in 365 days, it's ambiguous, but it's definitely implied wife death.
Yes. Got some wife deathage here.
Yeah.
So, then we go back to Patrick and his father. And Patrick's father is like, let's go for a walk. And then the dumb lieutenant who references Dazed and Confused snaps an impossible picture of the two of them.
Yes.
And they argue because Patrick's father wants to desert.
Right.
He wants to go AWOL because he wants to come back to his son.
Yeah. Now, Patrick explains that, like, he died a hero because he jumps on a grenade.
Yes.
Like he's Captain America.
And unlike Captain America, he does not survive jumping on the grenade.
Yeah, but he doesn't because he's not Captain America.
And they argue and we find out that Patrick could have prevented a death and didn't. And feels responsible.
Right.
So then Patrick and his father fight. And I have it as the low-rent version of the waterfall fight from Black Panther.
Yeah.
Because it looks like this, but not as well done.
Yeah, and, like, very wrestling. Like, very, like, suplex. Like, there's an arm drag in there. It's very, like, pro wrestling of a fight between a soldier and a cop.
Yes. So we go back to JD and Brax, and they're at gunpoint being interrogated.
Yeah.
And earlier in the movie, they had named one of the guns in the armory Alejandro because it was huge.
Yes.
Like the man Brax had spent the night with. And so they're being interrogated by these gangsters and they're like, this is our fantasy. And somebody goes, maybe this isn't your fantasy.
Yes. So this is where I start the hypothesis that it is one of the fantasies of the brothers to be, for the other one to die.
Yeah.
Like to be free of the burden of their brother, which I think is intentional.
Yeah.
I think is what we want to think. And this is something this movie does a lot. It feeds us wrong information.
Yeah. Because JD says, like, the money's downstairs after they almost cut JD's hand off.
Yeah.
And JD stays upstairs with some of the gangsters, and Brax has to go downstairs with the rest of them.
Yes. Now, they established that there are multiple panic rooms.
Yes.
So, like, we kind of know what's up here.
Back to Gwen.
Back to Gwen.
And Gwen's little daughter is building a sandcastle. And Gwen goes, like, very normal, like, mom to a five-year-old, like, can I come live in your sandcastle? And she goes, no. And she goes, why not? You know why, Mommy.
Yeah.
And Alan goes like, eh, it's not personal. She said I couldn't live there either.
I can't live there either. I want to talk about how she goes to like play on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I are immediately, who are like versed in TV tropes, like, oh no, something horrible is about to happen to this child.
Yeah, because she's, they're like, Alan and Gwen aren't looking at the little girl or paying attention to the little girl who is now playing out by the water.
Yeah.
And unless this is Moana, and this is not Moana.
Yeah.
Usually little kids playing near water unattended goes really badly.
Yeah. Because there's legitimately a shot where I was like, oh my God, a shark's going to jump out of the water.
Yes.
But it doesn't. It doesn't. But I was just totally like, oh, here comes the shark.
And then we go back to Michael Rooker, Melanie, and Sloane. And we see that Melanie looks at her phone because she tries to prove, like, I recorded this. I thought you were a hologram when she and Sloane are screaming at each other.
Yeah.
And
this is me saving you just for proof.
Yeah. And Melanie's lock screen is the same as the framed picture.
Yes.
And this is when I think something's up because, like, usually you don't have the same...
Yeah, it's one picture.
And it's like a selfie.
It's a selfie. He's looking at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And she's looking at him adoringly.
Yeah. But like, you know, I have a picture of you and I as my phone lock screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a different picture of you and I, like, in my office.
Yeah.
And we have, like, a different one framed in the house. So, you know... It's strange to me. I'm like, oh, you guys have the same selfie. And I noticed it and put a note here. That's why I wanted to point out that I had that. They're in this cave now.
Yes.
And Melanie has a Burn Man jump scare.
Yes.
So now, because I actually now have Melanie, Gwen, and Brax all have seen the Burn Man. JD and Patrick, to our knowledge, have not seen the Burn Man.
Right.
And we get through this water cave that has sea snakes...
Has sea snakes. They keep making that joke. Don't freak out, but there's snakes everywhere.
And they see this magical rock with water flowing out of it that shows them all their deepest desire.
Yes.
And it shows, like, a montage of all of the other guests until Sloane looks at it.
Yeah.
And then it's her husband putting his arm around her and saying, I forgive you.
Yeah. Her and biggest fantasy is to get back together with her husband.
Yeah, like, that she... is genuinely repentant for what she's done and wishes her husband would forgive her. And, like, Melanie says something, and then, you know, there's still... Melanie's still trying to play up that she was kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
But then the rock sells her out.
Yeah.
And Sloane says, like...
You did all of this because of a couple of pranks?
Pranks? You tortured me every single day for years.
Oh, please. I teased you a little.
I was so traumatized by what you did. I had to finish high school from home.
And, like, realizes why she was kidnapped, but downplays her own role in Melanie's trauma.
Yeah, Melanie's like, I teased you a little.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, you ruined my life. I had to go to therapy because of you.
Yeah, and then we go back to Gwen. Julia begins to cough up blood, and Gwen tries to give her water. And Gwen says to Julia, like, this isn't the moment I most regret. And Julie goes, well, then it doesn't break the rule of one fantasy. The fantasy is wrong.
Yeah.
So this isn't a second fantasy. You want your first fantasy done right. Yeah. So Julia gives Gwen away to get out of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, she feels undeserving of this life. And basically she goes to Rourke. I keep doing that. She goes to Rourke. And she basically says...
There was a fire. I could have saved someone and didn't.
Yeah. Well, her establishing is, I didn't believe that what this island was. Now that I know what it was, what it is, this is actually my greatest fantasy.
Yeah.
And we start to establish this theme, which is really nice. I really like this theme of there's what you want and there's what you should do.
Yeah.
And, like, let's be real, what she really wants.
What you want and what is the right thing to do.
Yeah. What she wants is this life with this child and this man.
And Alan.
She does say, like, I have 5 years of a memory with of memories with this child, which means, like, she does have memories of the time she spent with them.
Yeah, so it's not years. Like one of those situations where, like, you just have a kid and suddenly... It's not WandaVision.
Yeah, it's Butterfly Effect. Like, she does have a memory of that time.
Yeah.
Even though she didn't actually get to experience it. And she's like, it's not a different fantasy. I need to go do this. She drinks more of the water.
And he says, like, are you willing to sacrifice your husband and daughter for this? And she says she is.
Yeah.
And...
she takes her ring off.
And puts it on his desk. And then she goes to the double doors and she's in an apartment building on fire.
Yes.
She's in her, like, she's in her apartment, yes. Which is on fire.
Yeah. She had left the kettle on.
Yeah, she'd left the burner on. And it had started this colossal fire.
Yeah.
She runs up the steps to get to the apartment because she hears someone screaming in the apartment above.
Yeah, help, I'm trapped.
And in the fire escape, fire stairs, she passes JD and Brax.
Yes.
Who, it was their building too.
Mm-hmm.
And she tries to break the door down but can't.
Yeah.
To get to the screaming man. And then she runs down to go talk to the cop.
Officer!
Back it up!
There's
Let's
someone
go.
Inside! I need you to help me Miss, break this door down!
Please calm down. Help is on the way. Sorry, do I know you?
The fire is in my unit. It's my upstairs neighbor. He's trapped. You need to come inside. You need to help me kick his door in.
We should wait for the fire department. They'll be here any moment.
It'll be too late.
Who's outside? Yeah. And the cop is Patrick. Who says, like, we should wait for the fire department.
Yeah, don't be a hero.
And then she runs back into this burning building, goes to her apartment to try to find something to bludgeon down the door.
Mm-hmm.
And collapses owing to smoke inhalation.
Yes.
Two things here. What would Patrick have been able to do if, like, she was going to die of smoke inhalation? He has no extra protective equipment.
He's a bigger man.
Yeah.
And I could believe that Patrick could break the door open.
Yeah.
I'm sure Patrick also would have some sort of tool in his cop car.
Yeah, at least something she could bludgeon.
Yeah, that would help her open the door. Plus, like, as a cop, he would at least have CPR training.
Yeah. So then we get back to Brax and JD and the house.
Yeah, yeah. We kind of assume Gwen's dead in her fantasy.
Yeah.
As we cut back to...
because she falls unconscious. She's not burned or hit with anything.
Yeah.
She succumbs to smoke inhalation.
Yeah. She does not stay low, as explained to every middle schooler.
She also, like, touches her own... if you were going to break into an apartment during a fire, I would break into not the apartment where the fire started.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of stuff like, come on, you didn't have fire prevention week when you were in school? Like, she touches a hot doorknob.
Yeah, like, I would maybe break into someone else's apartment or try to grab something in the lobby.
Yeah.
But she's not super smart.
Because, like, she's like, I need something to break the door. I was like, I have the answer for you. It's fire extinguisher. There's gotta be one.
Yeah. So, we go back to the house and... Brax goes into, quote, where the money is, and we realize it's the armory.
Yes.
And shuts the door behind himself.
Yeah, he turns on the tennis pitcher to kind of, like, distract everybody, and then jumps in the safe room.
So, they're like, your brother is as good as dead.
Yeah.
And then we hear a loud boom as a rocket launcher has been fired off.
Is it a rocket launcher or is it a shotgun?
Maybe it's a shotgun.
It's a big-ass gun. Yeah, it's a BFG.
It creates a giant hole.
Yeah.
And then we see Brax through the hole and he goes, this isn't your fantasy, asshole.
Love it.
Then we go back to Michael Rooker. This movie is so freaking disjointed.
Yeah, there's not enough of the switching.
The transition.
I think there is a moment where, I think it's this moment where Sloan goes, was that gunshots?
Yes.
But, like, when they pull that off, it's great. But it doesn't happen every time, which kind of sucks.
So, Michael Rooker talks about how his fantasy... he was a private investigator trying to find the secret of the island.
Mm-hmm.
And his fantasy was to see his daughter again. But he's like, the fantasies go wrong here. She became a black-eyed zombie. And he wants to save the two of them because they remind him of his daughter.
Yes.
Of, like, because they're young women and he's connecting to them.
He also gives Melody some of the water as, like, proof.
Yeah, take the water with you, smuggle it off the island.
Yeah, and tell him that, and then call someone and get the plane.
Yeah, because he knows a pilot who's waiting, but he hasn't been able to get to a functioning phone.
Yeah.
Then Dr. Torture shows up.
Yeah, it's Dr. Torture again.
And then...
Can we talk real quick about how Dr. Torture is clearly the Dead by Daylight killer they wanted to get into Dead by Daylight?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, this guy, they needed a monster that was like...
Recognizable.
Recognizable. So they were like, let's put in this weird doctor with his mouth stapled shut.
Yeah, even though there's already a doctor in Dead by Daylight.
Yeah, there is. But there's not a Dr. Torture. What a terrible name. Like, the only worst name I can think of is House of a Thousand Corpses. Because the bad guy in that is Dr. Satan. Dr. Torture is a horrible name.
Yeah. Well, I got the impression that that was her nickname for him as a teenager.
I kind of thought that too, but like...
We don't have any reason not to think that that's the case.
He responds to Dr. Torture.
He would know she called him that.
It's dumb. It's dumb. The moral of the story is Dr. Torture is dumb.
Anyway, so Michael Rooker's character is stabbed, and he spears Dr. Torture off a cliff like he's Goldberg.
Yes.
And Melanie... To save Melanie and Sloane.
Yeah.
Back to JD. Oh, so then we're back to Patrick and his father.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on their operative mission in Venezuela. And they come up behind a house. And it's the house JD and Brax are in.
Oh, man, did I love this moment.
I loved it, but it also, like, weirdly creates a time hole. Because of the dude with the jetpack in the beginning. If they had left out that weird detail... You could be like, oh, this party happened in 1995.
Yeah, because we see him, he's do that, and then we also see him on a jet ski later.
Jet skis existed in the 90s. Like,
yeah.
That's not the plot hole to make.
Right, what I'm saying is, it could have just been a jet ski.
Yeah.
They could have just done the jet ski the whole time, but they made a point to also show the Iron Man water jetpack.
Yeah. So, Brax... comes out with a grenade that he's pulled the pin on. Because we've established, oh, if you pull the pin, you can put the pin back in. But if I let go of this thing, we go boom.
Yeah, you gotta hold it. Which, I just want to point out, like, there's a very big Lost feeling in this. Like, the show Lost.
Yeah.
And this is also a plot point in Lost.
Is it?
They do this to Miles, who is another Asian gentleman. Who, he lands on the island later. He's like an operative. And they have him tied up, and they take a grenade, they pull the pin, and then they stick it in his mouth, and they're like, that'll keep you from talking. So he's got to hold this grenade closed in his mouth, or he'll explode.
Yeah.
So they're kind of in a very similar situation of, like, it's this guy holding this grenade, like, you can't let me drop this, or we're all going to explode.
Yeah. So we have this, like, interesting... moment, and we have anytime I start calling them NPCs at this point. Anytime we have someone who's not one of the guests or someone we care about,
yeah,
because this doesn't happen with Patrick's father,
yeah,
they bleed black blood out their eyes.
I love that you caught this because basically what they're saying is these are people created by the island,
yeah,
so they bleed this black goo, it usually comes out of their eyes too,
yeah.
To show, like, this is not a real person.
Yeah.
But the fact that Patrick's dad bleeds red means it's really his dad.
Yeah.
Like, this is not someone who was created by the island. That's really his dad.
Yeah.
Super cool.
That's the only person we really see that bleeds red.
Yes.
Patrick's father and Julia.
I think also we could say Sloane.
Well, we see how Sloane has taken the... Sloane's not, like... Sloane gets kidnapped and brought to the island by boat. So she's not... The island didn't generate Sloane.
Right.
Because she's a living person. They just kidnapped Sloane and brought her to the island. The island had to, like, generate Patrick's father.
Yeah.
So Patrick sees Brax with the grenade and panics because he knows that's how his father died.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrick and his father... have this moment where they realize, like, oh my god, a grenade. That's how Patrick's father died. And the gangsters take advantage of their confusion and get the drop on Brax and Patrick.
Yes.
And his father. So everyone, there's a big fight. Everybody kind of makes it through.
Have we gotten JD back yet at this point?
JD just shows up.
Well, because he releases all the models, and this is where he's like, Chastity, very disappointed in you. Chastity's like, whatever.
Yeah, all the models are just like, whatever, we're hot and we survived. To the point where I actually wonder, because we don't see any of them bleed or anything.
Part
of
me was like, are they real?
Are they just, like, hired?
Yeah.
Like, were the... One, like, Alejandro dies, and we don't see whether Alejandro bleeds.
Yeah, that's right, because there's a moment, we kind of skipped over this, where they're all just drinking and partying, and JD's like, hey, a laser pointer! And then Alejandro's head explodes. But we don't see it, he just kind of, like, falls out of
frame. Yeah, it's just like a boom headshot. So, in the, like, remaining, they're all like, okay, we made it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of the... quote-quote dead NPCs come back. They, like, no-sell all of their injuries and return. There is a firefight and JD is shot.
I cannot believe I ever let Jenny go. When I get home, I'm gonna tell her. She's my moon and my stars.
Jenny?
Yes.
And JD bleeds red because JD is JD. Yeah. Brack starts to lose it.
Yeah. JD and dies.
Yeah, and then we go back to Melanie and Sloane because they need to call this number, and Melanie goes, I know where there's service on the island because Sloane's phone made that phone call to her husband. So they run down to the basement where there's service, and Sloane calls her husband. And Sloane then owns her damage and genuinely apologizes both to her husband and to Melanie. For what she's done to them.
Yeah, it's a cool moment where she's on the phone with her husband, but she's looking at Melody, and the apology works for both of them.
Yeah.
This is cool. I really like this scene.
Yeah, and like, Sloane, the actress playing Sloane really does sell it well of, you know, this genuine remorse. And then we see Julia grab Gwen and drag her out of the fire.
Yes.
And Gwen looks at Julie and goes, I should have been able to save him. This is someone else's fantasy.
Yeah.
Because if Gwen had been able to live out her fantasy of saving Nick, even if it had come at the price of her own life, which I think she was prepared for.
Yeah.
She wanted to save this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So Sloane and Melanie are in the basement. We hear the black water drip and they grab pipes. Patrick's father did jump with a grenade.
Yeah.
We did see that before. Sloane and Melanie...
Well, see, I thought he just gets gunned down. I think he might just get gunned down.
Yeah, I don't remember. I actually don't have it in my notes. We assume he doesn't survive it.
He doesn't survive, yeah.
So Sloane and Melanie grab pipes to arm themselves. We hear the black water drip of the, elevator. And the elevator opens, and they're armed, and they're ready. And it's just Patrick and Brax.
Yeah.
And they say, where's JD? JD didn't make it.
He didn't make it.
So we then establish the connection between all of them. Because Gwen kind of calls out the connection. Because Gwen's the only one who's like really aware of it at this point. About they all kind of had a thing happen in their past that they regret.
Mm-hmm.
Gwen started this fire in the apartment building by leaving the kettle on. JD and Brax were roommates with a guy who died in it.
Yeah.
Patrick was the cop. Brax thought Nick was with a girl.
Yeah.
Melanie got cold feet and stood up a date.
Yes.
And so the girl Brax thought Nick was out with was Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we called help. There's going to be a plane. So they all run out of the house and they see this plane. Brax yells, the plane.
Yes.
And Patrick's like, I'll take care of things here. You guys run.
Mm-hmm.
The plane is shot down.
The plane is shot down with a rocket launcher.
Yes.
I was just like, this is, wow, a lot of stuff happening.
So then Melanie goes and...
It's by one of the gangsters, just to clear that up.
Yeah.
One of the gangsters shoots it down.
So then Melanie goes, I know another way. And here is where the movie begins to kind of crumble in on itself a little bit.
Yeah.
They all go down to this cave, and I actually start keeping notes of all of the young adult. This is a incomplete, incomprehensive list. These are just the things I caught where it rips off a young adult novel. They're all together, but then Gwen hears Lila laughing
Yeah.
and runs off.
So they all go, they all end up getting...
So it's the Jabberjays from Hunger Games.
Yes, yeah. It's exactly what that is.
And the rock down thing is the Mirror of Erised. When Patrick runs off, instead of snakes, he's grabbed by, like, corpse hands. You know, the Inferi from Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Sloane finds Michael Rooker's satchel, and then Sloane is faced with her own reflection.
Yes.
Like, the worst parts of her. I believe this is something we see in Divergent.
This sound.
Where when Triss faces her fears, one of them is Triss.
Yeah.
Brax finds JD with a sucking chest wound.
Mm-hmm.
And JD says, like, it should have been you. Which is the Horcrux locket. Where Ron has visions of Harry and Hermione saying horrible things to him.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, all of this is ripped off from kids' books.
Yeah. So, basically, everybody has to face their worst fear in this cave. In a scene that only exists...
So it's all the boggart.
It's all the boggart. It's all the boggart. And also, like, it's a scene that only exists because this was classified as a horror movie. And it feels really unnecessary. Like, this is, like... it really falls apart here.
Yeah.
And they make a point to show everyone bleeding black.
Mm-hmm.
So it's questionable if the little girl is actually killing the guy Gwen loves.
Yeah.
Or if this is just an island created thing. I also forget how Glenn gets, or when, now I'm doing it, Glenn. Gwen gets away, because I know Patrick drowns his dad.
Well, let me get through that, because I have all this written down.
All right,
down.
Go for it. I'm
sorry. We get another Dr. Torture jump scare.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Torture comes back. He fell off a cliff.
And then Gwen comes across Lila, and she goes, Lila, what are you doing? And then you joke, killing daddy. And then she goes, killing daddy.
I was like, oh, okay.
And
I wrote this
she
movie.
Goes, why? And she goes, you don't deserve him after what you did. My friend was right. And Lila reaches out and takes the hand of a man. The burned man that we've seen.
Yes.
And then the burned man regenerates into a young, healthy man.
Yeah. And what do you know?
So then Sloane overcomes herself.
Well, do you want to say who that man is?
We keep going back and forth. Let me...
Well, I know, but when we see that man, we recognize him because we see the picture with...
Yeah, okay, it's the man who died in the fire who's in Melanie's lock screen.
Yes.
So then... Patrick overcomes the vision of his father by drowning him in the water.
Which doesn't make sense because he died by a grenade. Why are we drowning people?
And then Gwen says, like, oh my God, Julia tried to help me. Julia is Nick's mother.
Yeah.
She comes to this conclusion that Julia, Mr. Rourke's assistant, this is all her revenge fantasy.
Yeah,
because Nick is her son and she's trying to get vengeance on all of these people.
Yeah, if we take a quick pause here.
Yeah.
They're basically establishing that Julia lied to all of them and is actually Nick's overprotective mother who is basically torturing all of them as her fantasy.
Yeah.
Earlier, it was established, though, that Gwen believed that Julia was Rourke's wife and was like coughing and bleeding because of the rules of the island that she gets the fantasy she wants, and the fantasy she wants is to go back to the fire, not to be married to this guy. So they kind of establish this thing like, you have to let me do this to save her life.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a total lie.
Yeah.
It's just misinformation the movie gives you.
So Nick goes like, tell Julia to stop this. We can save you.
Yeah.
And Nick says, who's Julia?
Mm-hmm. So that whole theory we just got, also a lie.
So we kind of finally get all the characters back together.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out whose fantasy it really is. Now that all the characters are back together.
And I want to say, just real quick, at this point, what did you think was going on? Because I remember thinking, we're out of characters.
I kind of assumed, like, it might have been his. Like, that he was doing this and that he was lying to Gwen. Because we have no freaking clue at this point.
Oh, that maybe it was Nick's fantasy?
Yeah.
Like, this was his dying breath, or maybe he survived it?
Yeah, maybe he survived and the burned man was like...
Okay, that's an interesting... I like that, actually.
Because he was, like, you know, he could have been disfigured but not... dead.
Interesting. I like that as an idea. That's, dear listener, not it either. But
we find out that it, what did you think was happening at this point?
At this point, I was just confused because, like, I understood, like, oh, these people going through this torture is somebody's fantasy.
Yeah.
But I felt like we were out of characters. So I was just like, if it's not Julia, then there's no one left. So this reveal gets me. I'll admit it.
Everything was Melanie's fantasy.
This is all Melanie's fantasy.
She had one really good date with Nick. She felt comfortable in her own skin. Mm. She felt worthy. She felt like she had a future with him. And then she got all dressed up for their second date, and he stood her up.
Mm-hmm.
And at first she was like, Sloan was right. I am worthless and not worthy of love. But then she read about the fire and found out that, like, the boy hadn't abandoned her. He had died. So she said, like, oh, you stole the future I wanted from me, so I'm stealing that future from you. So then Sloane laughs in her face.
Yeah.
She does this whole, like, breaking down what happened, and Sloane laughs at her and goes back full mean girl. And then you see her make eye contact very quickly with Patrick. Because they use the time where Melanie is distracted to get the drop on her.
Yes.
We find out that Julia is, in fact, Rourke's wife.
Yes.
Because then Gwen confronts Rourke and says, like, because we find out that Julia is exactly as she was when he met her.
Yes.
So she never remembers him, but is already ill with the illness that would eventually kill her.
Yes.
So she gets sick and dies, and the island regenerates her constantly. To the point where Rourke no longer tells her who she really is to him.
She no longer courts her because it's too painful.
And
but it's
Gwen confronts her and says, like, this isn't love. This is hell.
Yeah, it's hell for her.
Mm-hmm.
And this keeps happening as long as he serves the island.
Yes.
So that's the rule, is he's getting his fantasy of being with Julia as long as everyone on the island gets their fantasy and sees it to its natural completion, no matter what.
But he finds a way out of Melanie's fantasy by saying, like, all of my guests get a fantasy. Calling back the first scene.
Yeah, that makes this even better, now that I understand that first scene.
Because in the first scene, he told Sloane over the phone, you are my guest.
Mm-hmm.
Sloane does not get a fantasy.
Yeah.
So Sloane grabs the she doesn't even have to get to the fountain, because she's still holding
the canteen.
Michael Rooker's canteen, takes a swig of the enchanted water, and her fantasy is that Nick and Melanie get to be together forever.
Yeah.
Well, because it's this island, it's not specific. And burned Nick comes up through the fountain, grabs Melanie by the throat, and drags her down.
Yes. Which, it's very Friday the 13th.
Yes.
Where Jason comes out of the water, grabs her, drags her down, and they kind of have this moment of like, huh, so we won.
And then the grenade comes out of the water.
She gets out for a second, is like, grenade! And then gets dragged back down into the water.
So then Patrick throws himself on the grenade
mm-hmm.
and dies like his father.
Mm-hmm.
Gwen wakes up in her room!
It just keeps happening.
And she comes in to the lobby to see only Brax and Sloane.
Yes.
Sloane's still in that yellow dress. I'm like, if I was Sloane, I would have, like, stolen Melanie's clothing.
Yeah. My fantasy is for you to die and for me to get a shower.
Yeah. And they ask where Patrick went, and Rourke says, like, Patrick died the way he wanted to. He died a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And Rourke hangs the picture of Patrick and his father up next to a wedding picture of Rourke and Julia.
I love that. That is awesome, because it's the picture that was taken.
Yes.
Yeah, like, it's so good. I really like
it. So it's
got
this little bit of, like, shining light aspect mm-hmm. to it. And Brax comes to Rourke and he says, like, I want JD to go home and have a life. And Rourke says, well, every guest gets one fantasy, and you were part of JD's fantasy.
Yeah, so you didn't get yours.
But for JD to be able to live off this island, you would have to stay here forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go to the plane and it's just Gwen and Sloan.
Yeah.
And Sloan is lamenting how horrible she's been to the people in her life. And Gwen tries to urge her to forgive herself. And the plane's about to take off. And they go like, wait. Brax isn't on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
JD pokes his head out from next to the pilot and says, I don't think he's coming.
Yeah.
And then JD sticks his head out the window of the plane and waves. And Brax is elated.
Yeah.
That's all Brax wanted.
Mm-hmm. And the plane flies away. And, like, JD's going to live a life now. And he, like, right before he got shot, he had that moment of, like, I know what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to get back together with my girl. And I'm going to do this, 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 and this. So, like, he's going to go live the life he wanted.
Yeah. And so Brax and Rourke are talking. And he goes, I'm going to need to get you a name tag. Brax is an unusual name.
Mm-hmm.
And Brax says, like, you know, beats my college nickname.
Yeah.
I lost a bet and I had to get the most embarrassing ink possible. And then he opens his chest and it's just a tattoo that says, Tattoo.
Which is hilarious. And they're like, well, Tattoo.
Welcome to Fantasy Island, Tattoo.
Yes.
And then the Fantasy Island title card comes back up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I'm like, oh, they thought this was going to be a franchise.
Yeah. And that's how the film ends.
That is how the 12th highest grossing film of 2020 ends.
Isn't that hilarious?
It made money.
Yeah.
Because it was cheap.
Yeah.
It was $7 million production, made $48
million.
Mm-hmm. That's Blumhouse. It's kind of like... business model is their movies are all under $20 million to produce.
Yeah.
So it's really not difficult for them to turn profit on these movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, it had terrible reviews.
Yeah.
Terrible reviews. A lot of people felt it was very trite and cliched.
Okay.
I thought it was solidly fine.
Well, do you have any interesting trivia before we get into that part?
Not really.
Okay. So I will just go first here then.
Okay.
I say this every Razzie year. It's hard to say a movie is bad if it does what it promises. And like, this movie's not perfect, but there's a lot of good stuff in here. And there's like legit surprises. I don't think there's many good scares.
Mm-hmm.
If you want like a horror movie, it's not the best at like... creating tension and stuff like that. But I think it's everything I would want out of a movie called Fantasy Island.
Okay.
So, like, to me, it's an easy stay tuned. And, like, to the point of, like, I would totally watch a sequel.
So, something you and I talk about in the Razzies is whether a movie is what it promises to be.
Yeah.
I think that's where this movie falls down.
You don't think it's what it promises to be?
Well, when you look at the marketing for this movie, it had, you know, teen horror marketing. It's PG-13. The trailer came out with a Seven Rings by Ariana Grande that, like, I like it, I see it, I want it, I got it.
Yeah.
So it definitely seemed like more of a horror movie. It had Lucy Hale in it, who, like, her last one was Blumhouse's Truth or Dare.
Yeah,
I think people were expecting it to be a little more Final Destination, a little more... they were expecting a horror movie, not a character drama. And this movie's a character drama.
Yeah.
It's not a bad... like, it's not great, but it's not a bad character drama. But they have... they're trying to put in all of this... the Dr. Torture stuff. Like, they realized they didn't have any jump scares in a teen horror movie. I think it's not... the fun parts aren't fun enough.
Yeah, I think it is what I'd expect it to be as a 30-year-old man that knew Fantasy Island from Nick at Night. It is not what it was supposed to be if you are a teenager seeing these commercials who have never heard of Fantasy Island.
Yes.
And were expecting just a Wishmaster-esque horror film.
I think that's where this movie really had issues. Is it marketed itself as a teen horror movie, as a fun, you are going to watch Lucy and her Lucy Hale and her friends get bumped off in creative, fun ways. And it didn't happen. Like, everything was sad. Everybody kind of, like, had a sad story. the only person who gets any kind of, like, happiness at the end is Gwen. And, because, like, Melanie's dead.
Melanie's dead. Melanie
Sloane's like, gonna have to go home and deal with the consequences of what Melanie has done to her.
True, but I feel like she's better off than she was in terms of her relationship with her husband, in that now she's been honest and they can go to repairing rather than, like, still secretly having an affair and growing further apart.
Arguable. I would also say, like, she posted it on her public Facebook. She probably is coming back and she's, like, going to have been fired.
Yeah.
No one in her family or friends is probably speaking to her.
That's true.
She's going to have to go back and deal with the consequences of what has happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
JD is going to forever have to live with this, like, weird kind of guilt that Brax gave up his life.
Yeah.
For JD. Brax is kind of now a prisoner of the island, too.
Yes.
So, Gwen is the only one who gets any semblance of healing, because she at least is no longer beholden to the regret.
Yeah.
So I think that's this weird, like, and Patrick's dead.
Yeah, Patrick got to live out his fantasy and got to die a hero, like he kind of wanted.
Yeah, but to me this is very, it's a very bleak ending. I guess you could argue that Gwen is the final girl. In a weird way?
Yeah, in a weird way.
But this, there's nothing fun. No one really even gets to have, like, a real honest-to-God, like, fun, badass moment outside of Brax. Who gets that, like, this isn't your fantasy, asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I mean, Patrick maybe has a few, but it's not as cool as Brax's.
And, like, so Rourke kind of gets away with it because he's beholden to the island, so he's not even a bad person.
Yeah, I will say, I feel like everything made sense. Like, there's a logic to it, because I love rules. Like,
I know you do.
Especially in a horror movie, like, if, like, there's an entity that is, like, coming after you. I love it when it has hard and fast rules, like, this is how it works, this is what it does, this is how you stop it. Love that. I don't quite understand why Rourke gave up his fantasy. Because I don't think he broke any rules. Other than the fact that he kind of interfered in Melody's, I guess.
Well, I think it's also, his fantasy is repeatedly killing his wife.
Yeah, I guess you could say that that came to its natural conclusion.
Yeah.
Where he's done with it, and he takes his ring off, which I liked because it mirrored Gwen's story.
Yeah, like, I think this movie, honestly, if it had been marketed as more of a character, more like the original show, of more of like a character drama.
Mm-hmm.
I think having the ending, having it be like, surprise, Melanie was evil the whole time. Also, Melanie was so freaking unlikable from the word go.
Yeah. Which I liked, because she went from unlikable to having this like redemption arc of like, Sloane was terrible to me, but this is too much and I'm going to save her, to then being like, no, I'm really terrible the whole time. Kind of dug it. I thought this movie, for a teen horror movie, was more thoughtful.
Yeah.
Like, I thought there was more thought put into it. It's better as a TV show.
Yeah.
I think this might have been better with one less story.
Yeah.
But I don't know who I'd get rid of.
Yeah, because JD and Brax, you need them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Patrick is the best story. Gwen and Melanie are needed for the plot.
Yeah.
Like, Patrick's is the most expendable to the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But you also kind of need his emotionally.
Yeah.
This movie is just, it's not that bad. Like, I don't think it's the worst picture of the year. But it's not great.
Yeah, where would you put it then? Like, stay doomed, stay tuned? Game over rule?
I feel, I'm like, really ambivalent toward it in a very weird way. Of like, stay tuned, but I feel like it was marketed completely wrong for what it was.
I think we might need a third category.
Of who cares?
Of I'd leave it on.
Like, well, no, this is a genre I wouldn't have put on to begin with.
Right, true.
Because I'm not a horror movie person. Mm. I actually enjoyed this movie. Again, this is like Winchester. This is exactly like Winchester.
Yeah.
If it was marketed as like a horror movie, but it's more of a thoughtful character study. Mm. And I think that bait and switch really pisses people off.
Yeah.
That being said, this would have never been nominated for a Razzie in a non-2020 year.
Yeah.
It's honestly kind of forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
It's solidly fine. I'd give it a C+ as a film. But because 2020 was 2020, the Razzies really tried to go for, like, anything that stuck out in any way. They were probably really disappointed that Sonic the Hedgehog
was so good.
Fixed itself.
Yeah. So, but I will say, as someone that does enjoy horror movies, I dug this film. I enjoyed it. I'd watch a sequel.
Yeah, I liked this more than I thought I would because it was more of a drama.
Yeah. So, yeah, an interesting ride for us here when it comes to the Razzies. So now it's time for everyone's favorite part of the show, which is house cleaning.
Yep.
In terms of some things. So we put out a poll and we asked, what movie should replace Absolute Proof? And I'm giving this a final refresh to see if there's anything has changed. As voted by our patrons, instead of doing Absolute Proof, we will be doing Jack and Jill, the only film to win every Razzie in a year.
Oh, good news. I already know what my cocktail's going to be.
Oh, good.
Fantastic.
Cool. So we'll be watching Jack and Jill, but that's not what we're watching next week. What are we watching next week?
We are watching Music.
Yes, the Sia film Music. This is going to be a drag.
Yeah. Trigger warning in advance.
Yeah.
So. If you have issues with poor handling of issues for people with autism, this movie handles things badly.
Really bad.
I've already started research on this one, so this movie's kind of a crap show.
So that is next week. Now, patrons and non-patrons, if you want to join our Patreon, you can have a voice in what we're going to be watching. Go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/plus2comedy, and you can sign up for $5 and have a voice and also join our Discord. But we also do a bonus episode. And currently, we have our bonus episode on the game show Trapped from the UK. You can listen to that right now, along with all of our past bonus episodes. But we got to decide our next bonus episode. So we're going to put a poll up on Twitter right now, and you can vote on what we should do. And then the top two will be voted on by our patrons. Here are your choices this month. One, we have a bit of a tradition that we review WrestleMania.
Yes.
So we don't have a real good reason to do that as part of the show this year. So it'll be a Patreon exclusive if you vote for it, if you'd like to hear our thoughts on WrestleMania 37, a two-night event.
Yeah.
Also, we have what our patron Matthew, by the way, thank you for being a patron, sent me a film that I had never heard of somehow, but it seems very interesting. It's called Southland Tales. It is a movie starring The Rock, directed by the director of Donnie Darko. I know nothing about this film, so if you'd like to hear our thoughts on Southland Tales, you can vote for that one.
I did really like that you were like, it's the Donnie Darko guy with The Rock, and I went, oh, Southland Tales?
Yeah, you knew what it was immediately. I had never heard of it. And then we each pitched an idea. Laura, what was your idea?
Each of our top five Disney attractions.
Yeah, we're big Disney
heads. Because I wanted to do something fun.
Yeah, so we will talk about our Disney World attractions. I'm going to guess they all come from Disney World because it's the only one we've been to.
Yeah.
But yeah, our top Disney attractions. I thought it would be fun to do a deep dive in Nickelodeon giveaways. Not game shows, but their giveaways. So we'll be talking about things like Nick or Treat and this Nickelodeon Super Toy Run and things of that nature. So those are your choices for our bonus episode. Will it be Southland Tales, WrestleMania, top five Disney attractions, or a deep dive on Nickelodeon giveaways? Vote right now on the Stay Doomed Twitter. Where can people find us, Laura?
You can email us at thestaydoomedshow@gmail.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Stay Doomed.
And if you want to talk to me about what your Fantasy Island fantasy would be, I'm at +2comedy.
If you want to talk about how poor marketing can actually have damaging effects on a film by showing the wrong genre and how audiences feel lied to, I'm at Sprocket League. Until next time, stay doomed.